Tonight's shir is L'nishma Sima Rachel Baser of Tzvi Aryeh. Parasha Shoftim has quite a few interesting topics that need a lot of discussion to understanding what exactly is going on. The beginning of the parasha, the Torah discusses the judicial system, Shoftim v'Shoitrim, the judges and the Shoitrim, those that enforce the law, which we'll talk about. Then later on, the Torah discusses the rules of a melech, having a Jewish king, the rules of having some rules relating to a Navi. Then we talk about Ir Miklat again, the idea of a Jewish city, a safe haven, not like we that's discussed today in politics. A safe city is a different type of a safe city. This is a city that protects those that kill accidentally. And then at the end of the parasha, the Torah discusses the idea of preparing for war. What does it mean to be a Jewish soldier? What's the mindset, the attitude of Jewish war? And then the Torah concludes with a rather fascinating story of the Egla Rufa. The Torah teaches us a parasha of when a man dies and no one knows cause of death, no one knows the murderer, how do we deal with that? All different parashas, but many of them are very connected to each other. Hopefully, we will be able to draw that connection between all of them. But we will start in the beginning of the parasha. The first pasuk in the Torah tells us, Shoftim v'Shoitrim. So most Rishonim learn the Shoftim are those who make the laws. They write law, they decide what is law. The Shoitrim, and those are the enforcers of the law. Those that go out and make sure everyone does what they are supposed to do. That's the way Rashi learns. Almost all the Rishonim learn Shoftim means those that make the laws, and Shoitrim those that enforce the laws. There is a minority opinion, it's quoted in the Medrash, that Shoitrim means the manig of the generation, those that lead the generation. Not necessarily the police, but those that are, I guess he'd call them today, the askonim, those who lead and guide and help the nation. But then we have the Shoftim and the Shoitrim. Says the Torah, Titan l'chol b'chol sharech, you must have these people. They should be placed in all of your sha'arim, all your gateways. A very big emphasis on rules and regulation. We have to have a system of rules, and it's not enough to have the rules on the books, we actually have to enforce the laws, because without enforced laws, laws have no value. The question that many of the Rishonim deal with, why exactly is this said over here? The end of Parashas Re'eh had a storyline. What was the end of Parashas Re'eh talking about? It was talking about being Oyle Regel. The Torah was giving us a fulfillment, a commandment, which we don't have today, of being Oyle Regel. And then the Torah tells us right after that, make sure you have laws and regulations. What exactly is the connection? So the Baal HaTurim writes that the connection is based on a Gemara and Kiddushin. The Gemara and Kiddushin tells us that Oyle Regel, or Yom Tov time, the Gemara tells us the end of Kiddushin, used to be the largest, the biggest chance for one to do sin, was during Yom Tov. Why? So Tosfos and Kiddushin has a pshat, and the Torah has a pshat. But a lot of the reasons had to do with, there was a lot of mingling and a joyous attitude during all the Yom Tovim, or specifically during Oyle Regel. You can imagine this mass migration of Jews from all over the country. So it can somewhat get out of hand. In order to ensure Oyle Regel does not turn into something that it shouldn't be, says the Baal Turim, that's Shoftim v'Shoitrim. That's part of the job of the Shoftim and the Shoitrim. Wasn't just to make a law that if you steal, you have to pay back, and who's guilty and who's innocent, and mutter nasr. It was to be in charge of the benefit of Klal Yisrael. So the Shoftim and the Shoitrim would have to make sure that during these Oyle Regalim, everyone behaved appropriately and everyone did what they were supposed to. No crossing of the line, the mechitas were up, and all things like that. So writes the Baal HaTurim, the connection between the end of Parshas Re'eh and the beginning of Parshas Shoftim. Moshe Shtemach in his Sefer takes it a step further, and he writes that it's incumbent upon the Rabbanim to make sure at Chasim and other, you know, joyous times that we make sure that there's separation between the man and the woman. Okay, I'll leave that for his drasha, but nonetheless, that's the Baal HaTurim's point in the connection. The Arachayim HaKadosh learns a very different pshat. Says the Arachayim HaKadosh, one would think to themselves, I don't need a judicial system. I don't need a bezdin. If I have a dispute between my friend, I'll wait till Oyle Regel. I'll go Oyle Regel. There'll be a Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim. I'll deal with it then. Why do I need it in my house? I have to have it in my backyard, in my neighborhood. I have to have a judicial system. Says the Torah, yes you do. I know there's Oyle Regel, says the Torah. I'm well aware that three times a year you make this mass trip. I get it. But don't think, so why do I need to bother with my own bezdin? I'll wait, says the Torah. That's not correct. Everyone has to make sure they go right away, says the Rechaim HaKadosh, because we all know that what happens when we delay, we don't get things done. So therefore, says the Rechaim HaKadosh, that's the contrast between the two psukim. The Torah is telling us, do not delay under the premise of, oh, I'll get to it, I'll be on the regal, then I'll bring my case. No, you have to take care of it right away. That's the way the Rechaim HaKadosh learns the connection. Rav Moshe Bick in his Sefer Chaim Moshe goes a slightly different angle. He says the connection is towards the end of the pasuk. In the end of last week's parasha, there's an important pasuk. Besides talking about Oyel Regel, the Torah discusses Asher Birchas Hashem Alekecha. There's a reference to brachas that Hashem will give us. Points out Rav Moshe Bick a very interesting idea. Brachas, let's say wealth, is a bracha and a potential klola at the same time. Wealth is a very tricky thing. On one hand, if you use it well, it's a terrific thing. On the other hand, if it's used incorrectly, and you're not giving the tzedakah that you're supposed to and the other things, it can come back to bite you. So he says like this. The Torah says, at the end of parashas, is Reda HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give you a bracha, but you don't yet know if it's a bracha. Is this wealth a bracha? This wealth is really masked as the worst thing that I can ever have in my life. Because I got this bracha of wealth, I don't have as much time, and I'm so busy, and I don't get to enjoy the money, and I'm not using the money properly. On that, the Torah writes, so how are you supposed to know? How is an individual supposed to know? Is he using his money right or not? Says the Torah, shayftim v'shaytrim. You got to figure it out. You got to judge, and you have to be honest, and you have to enforce yourself to make sure that you're using the gift of money or the bracha properly to ensure that it's a bracha instead of being in return a kalala. So that's the connection between the parasha. The Torah is saying that you need to have shayfit v'shaytrim. He says that's really in a form of introspection. Make sure that you're using the bracha of wealth properly. And how do you know if you're using it properly? That's the next pasuk. Tzedek tzedek tirdeif. If your attitude is to run after helping people, and your attitude is to give tzedakah, then you know you're using it properly, then it's ultimately a real bracha. However, if you're not going to stop and think and take stock of, am I doing this right? Am I using the money for what Hashem gave to me? Then it's going to not be a bracha like the Torah describes at the end of the parasha. That's the way he understands the connection. But be it as it may, we are introducing this week's parasha to a very strong significance on rules and regulations. The Torah is telling us you have to have shaytrim, you have to have shayftim. They both are very important for society. The Sforno tells us that why is the Torah discussing this now? Says the Sforno, till now we were discussing rules for all of us. Individuals. We all have individual mitzvahs that we have to do. Now the Torah is saying there's a specific emphasis on the leaders of the generation. The shayftim, the shaytrim, the melech, the navi. There's a very important emphasis on those that are in the leader positions. Managerial positions, we'll call them. They have an unbelievable achrayis. Because, says the Sforno, when they do not do their job correct, the entire breakdown of society begins. The entire society, as we know it, is based on our leaders. And you don't have to look too much further than political situation today in this country. When the leaders are corrupt, the people become corrupt because we look up and say, well, if they're doing that, I'll do the same thing. So therefore, says the Sforno, these are a strong emphasis on the leaders, because if the leaders are not living righteous lifestyles, it will break down the entire society. And that's why there's an emphasis on shayftim, shaytrim, a melech, even a king. But the king also has to have rules and regulations. Checks and balances for the king also, somewhat, at least from a religious standpoint. And the melech and the navi, everyone has to have some form of balance in order to ensure that society continues. The Medrash also tells us something very, very important to note. We know shayftim are the judges. So we look at the judges today in our mind as, you know, the Supreme Court. So we think of the Supreme Court, they have to be lahavdil, intelligent people, intellectual people, well-read people. So shayftim are the same. They're rabbis. They have to study Torah. They have to know cheshem mishpat. What are the shaytrim? So you think of the shaytrim as, you know, thugs. They're the guys who go around with bats and smacking people. You don't have to be very intelligent. You don't have to be very well-read. You just have to be able to give a good beating. Says the Medrash, not so. The Torah writes the two words next to each other to compare the two. Just like the shayftim have to be Torah people, Torah knowledge, Torah value. They have to have good midas and they have to be good people. So too the shaytrim. We don't just send out to a police force anyone who knows how to shoot a gun, anyone who knows how to swing a bat. That's not the Jewish police force. The Jewish police force is a different experience. You have to be as special as a shayfit. You might not be as well versed in the cheshem mishpat rules, but you have to have midas, and you have to be a Torah Jew, you have to be living a Torah lifestyle. It's not enough just to be a hooligan with a gun. That does not make you a police officer in the Jewish police force. Something very important to keep in mind in society, that the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up our system is similar, so to say, but very different. Just to be a police in the Jewish army, you have to be a very different person. The Medrash also tells us that the two words go together, shayfet and a shayter, because if you have a shayfet without a shayter, you have nothing. If you have shayftim writing rules and no one enforcing the laws, they are worthless. This is, again, a very big topic today in politics in our country. If we have laws on the books and no one is enforcing them, is that really considered a rule? And the Medrash says it's not. If you have shayftim making rules and no one enforces them, it is useless. If you have only police officers that don't know the laws and they're just running around hitting people, that is also useless. It is a team. They have to be working together. Shayftim making the laws, shayftim enforcing the laws. One without the other is not going to work. Rashi also says something interesting, that Rashi says that what are the shaytrim? They're kaifsim b'makel uberitzua. They hit with a stick and a strap. So Reb Steinman is medayik from this Rashi. You see from Rashi, you can't just smack another Jew with anything you want. Take a metal rod and whack him over the head. No. You can only hit him with a makel and a ritzua. That means even when we're in the job of forcing someone, there's still ways of doing things. We as Jews have a whole different system. It's not just, okay, free-for-all, you got to break his legs, let's go for it. No! Says Rashi, it's got to be a makel and a ritzu, which is obviously a lighter blow than a metal rod upside his head. So therefore, says Reb Steinman, that even in our world of doing things, we still have to keep in mind, this is a Jew-on-Jew, so to say, violence. It has to be different than the goyim do things, because we have the Torah for us. The Sfasemis points out that, and he's really the first one to say this idea, but Reb Moshe says it quite a few years later, that this pasuk is talking to all of us. Obviously, this is always read in Elul season, so there's a lot of references. And throughout these parashas, there's quite a few references to the Elul theme. And this is one of those. Says the Sfas Emes, Shayftim v'shayftim means our avodas Hashem. We have two ways of dealing with Hashem. One is being a shayfit. That's an intellectual way. We say to ourselves, it doesn't make sense for me to do an avera from a simple, logical point of view. That we all know that sometimes we don't listen to logic. We make foolish mistakes. Says the Sfas Emes, that's the shaytrim. We have to listen to Hashem because we're forced to. So there's two steps in our avodas Hashem, says the Sfas Emes. There's the shayftim. We have to sometimes be that logical shayfik, that judge who makes a law from logic. And then sometimes we have to be our own shayter. We have to basically slap ourselves and force ourselves, like the police would force us, not to do an avodah. He says, that's what the pasuk says. Titan l'cha. I'm giving to you. You each have in your life two ways of combating the Yetzirah. Sometimes you can be a shayfet. You can use logic and say, listen, this doesn't make any sense for me to do X and Y avera. And sometimes you become a shayt. You use it as a shayt. Rav Moshe Feinstein said the same similar idea. Rav Moshe Feinstein said this pasuk is saying like this. Shayftim v'shayftim titen l'cha. He asked the kasha, what's the word titen l'cha you should give? Shayftim v'shayftim, you should have. Says Rav Moshe, no, we each have to be a shayfet and a shayter on ourselves. We have to be deciding, am I doing right and am I doing wrong? That's being a shayfet. And then we also have to be a shayter. We have to enforce the laws that we, so to say, just decided are right and wrong. So we each have to be our own shayfet. We have to decide, this is right and wrong, I'm not crossing this line. This is immoral, this is against Torah. And then we have to be a shayter to enforce that decision we just made. Similar to the Sfas Emes, Rav Moshe is bringing home this idea that, again, this pasuk is not just for the greater klai, so this for us as an individual, again, fitting very nicely with the theme of El and self-improvement, is that we have to stop and realizing, A, what I'm doing is correct or incorrect, and B, if I came to the conclusion this is not correct, I have to enforce myself not to go down a path that is not right for me. The Targum Yonasan ben Uziel and does the Targum Unkelus, they both learn, and many Mefarshim point this out, that although Shoftim and Shaytrim seem like a huge pain in the neck and an inconvenience, it is a matana. Titein l'cha comes from the word matana. Having shayftim and shaytrim is the greatest gift we can have. Why? And David Kviat in the Sefer Sukkos, David writes four reasons, and I don't think we really need to explain it. I think ask anyone who came from who's living in a government that's corrupt, and you move to a place where it's not corrupt, you say the beauty of a healthy government where everything is in balance. Says David Kviat, there are four benefits that we have, and that's why having judges is a matana. We shouldn't look at it and say, oh, what a pain. I have to have judges and shaytrim. It's a gift. It makes our lives better. The Torah says, if you have these, you're going to live and merit Eretz Yisrael. It's not just, you know, a nice thing. This is for your own benefit in life. And therefore, although it's difficult to look at it like that, one has to view having a system of laws and regulations as the greatest gift one can have, because it makes the world a better place, both on a very simple physical level and on a spiritual level as well. Rashi says in the first Rashi, Shayftim v'shaytrim, Shayftim dayonim ha-poiskim esadim. They are dayonim who rule, who give rulings to cases. So Moshe Sternbach points out, he says, many times you'll come to people, in Choshe Mishpat, two people having an argument. So the guy will just say, you know, let's make a pshara, we'll go 50-50. He says, that's not a psak. That's what you do when you don't know what the answer is. That's not a shayfet's job. A shayfet's job is to give a ruling. guilty, innocent, pay, don't pay. Now, the Gemara tells us about Metziah, there's an emphasis on making a pshar when possible, but often a pshar is used when you don't know the answer. So like when a rabbi doesn't know the answer, he just tells you to be machmer. That's not an answer, it means you don't know the answer. Says Rav Moshe, that's not an answer for Chesh Mishpah, just to say, yeah, I don't know, 50-50. Well, you're taking away someone's money, shalai kedin. So therefore he says it's the job of the Shevet to make sure he's ruling correctly, to make sure everything he's ruling is a proper ruling, not just a ruling out of lack of knowledge. Pasuk tells us that you have to have shvatim noisim lechol lishvatecha. Rashi learns every shevet had their own judicial system. The obvious question is, why does every shevet need their own judicial system? They lived amongst everyone else. Why do they need their own judicial system? So I believe the answer is very important. That part of the shevetim, as we mentioned earlier, wasn't just rulings from Shulchan Aruch, from a halachic standpoint. It was leaders to be a manik. Set up laws, regulations, policy, customs, things like that. It's very difficult to set up rules and customs for people that you're not familiar with. You have to know your people. You have to know your shevet. You know these people. You spend time with them. You know what makes them tick. You know what makes it work. You know how they react. You can't just walk into a foreign area and start making rules and regulations when you don't know the people. You don't know what they need and what they don't need, how tough to be, how easy to go. So that's why specifically Lishvatecha, each shevet needed their own system of rules. Again, Chayshim Mishpat is for all Jews. Right? Certain rules are not debatable. But part of the Shevet's job was more than just right and wrong, guilty and innocent. It was to set a standard. You know, it was a system of what's proper and what we do and what we don't do here. You have to know your people. Often, you know, I was once asked to speak in a certain shul, and the person told me, don't give them mussar. I said, why would I give them mussar? I don't even know them. How can I walk to someone else's shul and get up and tell them all the chesrainis? I don't know their chesrainis. They're not going to listen to me. And who am I to give them mussar? I don't know them. I have no relationship with them. They don't pay my salary. So why should I get up and give them mussar? So here also, if the role of the shevetim is to help society, you have to know your society in order to help them. If you're not in touch with them and you're not aware of what they need and what they don't need, you're not going to be very successful at your job. So that's a very big emphasis that the Torah makes at the beginning of the parasha on having a judicial system, the beauty of a judicial system, and the importance of having a judicial system. Comes along with that, says the Torah, is you can't have a corrupt system. Says the Torah, loisate mishpat, loisake ponim, loisika shoychat, you can't have any of this dirty stuff that takes place today in our society. You can't have any of that stuff. Everything's got to be honest. No bribery, no turning, nothing. Everything has to be honest and honest. Says the Torah, bribery is the worst thing in the world. Why? Bribery blinds people. People cannot see straight when they are presented with a bribe. An amazing story with Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, when he first took over the yeshiva in Volozhin, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik married the granddaughter of the Netziv, so he took over the Volozhin yeshiva. So at that time, there was a rule from the Russian government, you're not allowed to have more than 200 students in the yeshiva. The Lajan at that time had 400 students. This is obviously a big problem. So when the minister of education came down to meet the yeshiva, everyone was nervous. So in the past years, what they used to do was they would kind of bribe the inspector to pass the yeshiva, even though it didn't fit the law. The problem is this year, the minister himself, Bechvaydu Ba'atmer, was going to come to the Lajan yeshiva, and he's already so high ranking, he's not going to take bribes. So they don't know what to do. So they came to Reb Chaim Soloveitchik and said, Rebbe, what are we going to do? We're going to lose the yeshiva. We're going to close the yeshiva. So Reb Chaim Soloveitchik said, I have an idea. So the Minister of Education came in the middle of July. And he told the minister, he showed up to the meeting in his wool coat, his you know, winter coat, his boots, and a hat. Middle of July. So the minister said to him, you know, Rabbi, what's wrong? It's 100 degrees outside. He said, my grandmother came to me in a dream last night and said, tonight it's going to be a blizzard. So I'm dressing appropriately. So the minister said, with all due respect, Rabbi, you lost it. It's not happening. We're in the middle of July. So Reb Chaim Soloveitchik said, you know, I'll make a bet with you. I'll bet you $100 that tonight's going to be a blizzard. So the minister said, oh, this is easy money. This is easier than taking from a baby. He said, yeah, you're on, Rabbi. We'll make the bet. So obviously everyone knows the next morning there was no winter storm, there was no blizzard, and Reb Chaim Soloveitchik had to pay up. So Reb Chaim Soloveitchik told the administrator of the yeshiva, give him the money, tell him here's the $100, and tell him we have 200 bachim in this yeshiva. So Kachave gave him the $100 to pay up the debt, and he told him, you have 200 bachim in this yeshiva, and that was the end of that. The yeshiva officially now 200 bachim. So they came to Reb Chaim, they said, Reb Chaim, how did you know you'd be able to pull this off? This guy was so up and up. He says, Reb Chaim, look at the Torah. It says in the Torah, ki ha-shoichi d'aveinei chacham v'yisalev divi tzadikim. So asks Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, if the guy's a tzadik, so why would he take a bribe? talking about righteous people. Righteous people don't take bribes. Says Reb Chaim, that's what the Pasuk is telling us. The Pasuk is telling us, you're really righteous. You're not a bad person. This minister of education wasn't a bad person. He didn't take bribes. But once there was money, again, this wasn't a real bribe, but once there's money there, all of a sudden it's a whole different picture. People hear what they want to hear. They see what they want to see when money is involved. Therefore, said Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, I knew I'd be able to pull it off based on this Pasuk. So we see clearly on Heichin Dvar Magim, how far, again, this wasn't even a bribe. This was clearly a payment for a bet. But Reb Chaim said, you see from the Pasuk, Salev David Tzadikim. The Gemara tells us in Ksubis, Daf Kofei, that bribery is not only in a form of money. Bribery comes in a bunch of other ways. The Gemara tells us in Ksubis about a bunch of Amorayim who had to take themselves off certain court cases because they felt they were too involved. Recuse, okay, there we go. I heard that word enough times in the news. I should be able to pronounce it by now. But the Gemara tells us about a bunch of Amorayim who had to step back for various reasons. Amazing reasons. The Gemara tells us that Shmuel, Arneimar, was about to rule a case, and they were crossing a bridge. It was hard for them to walk across the bridge, so someone reached out and helped them cross the bridge. And Shmuel asked him, why are you here? He said, oh, you're supposed to judge my case. He said, oh, you helped me? I step back, I can't take the case. The Gemara tells us another story where a feather fell on one of the Amorayim's head. Someone took the feather off his head. He said, why are you here? He said, I'm here to judge your case. I'm sorry, I can't judge your case because you did so much. So says the Gemara, you see that when the Shoichad, bribery can present itself not only in money, as a favor, and you have to be able to step away. So Rav Pam asked, he said, I don't understand. Were these Amorayim so fickle? A little handshake, a little feather off the head, that's it, they're going to throw the whole case? Says Rav Pam, you have a misunderstanding of what Hakaras HaTayv is supposed to be. These Amorayim had such a real feeling of Hakaras HaTayv. When someone really does you a favor and you really appreciate it, you automatically have a certain feeling towards them. It's not the pshat that they were so fickle, it's that they really understood what Hakaras HaTayv means. We have such a watered down version of appreciation that to us it's like, eh, he gave me his hand, no big deal. Says Rav Pam, no, for these people, they felt that when you do me a favor, that means something. I feel a certain connection to you. Therefore, I must step back from this case because I'm too involved. The Gemara tells us the word sheichad comes from the word shechat, becomes one. I become one with you. I'm involved now. Said Rav Pam, we don't have a good appreciation of thanking people. People do us a favor, we don't think twice about it. We're lucky if we even say thank you to them. That's the idea. These Amorayim weren't fickle for care. These Amorayim had a very deep appreciation when someone does a favor for you, when someone helps you, someone improves your life, and therefore, that's why they had to recuse themselves from doing these cases. The Vilna Gaon points out, why does the Torah refer to bribery? The Torah says, don't take sheichad, ki ha-sheichad ya'aver enei chachamim, because it blinds the eyes of the wise. In Parashas Mishpatim, it says, v'yisalif enei pikchim, the eyes of the wise people. What's a chacham, what's a wise man? So the Vilna Gaon says, there's a chacham, who means he's a knowledgeable Torah Jew. Knows all of Shulchan Aruch. A pikech is a wise person. We'll call it street smarts. So when someone takes a bribe, both of his strong abilities in life, being knowledgeable in Torah and being street smart, they both get blinded. He loses all sight of anything. He not only does he forget what the ruling in Shulchan Aruch, he even forgets his street smarts or how things work in the business world. Everything is lost, everything is tainted when a person takes bribery. That's how severe bribery is, and therefore one has to make sure not to take bribery. Right after this, the Torah introduces to us another prohibition. What's the prohibition? A person is not permitted to plant an asherah. Asherah is a tree that's used for worshipping Avodah Zarah. But here there's two things over here. Not only is there a prohibition of planting a tree, but you're not allowed to plant a tree. You're not allowed to put trees and grass by the Mizbeach. Why not? So Rashi tells us the reason why one is not allowed to do that is because that is in a violation of the Chukas HaGoyim. What the Goyim do is they jazz up with grass and trees and things. They make their Avodah Zarah look very nice. We're not allowed to do that. Two prohibitions learned that from this week's pasuk. Now Rashi says, Loisita l'chashera, l'chayv ole mishas netiyosei, afilu ovda ovar beloy asei al netiyosei. Says Rashi, if I plant a tree, I didn't bow down to it. But I plan, and when it grows, I'm going to bow down. I'm in violation right now. Again, I didn't bow down to the tree. I plan. I put a seed in the ground. When it grows in 5 years, I will bow down to it in 5 years. But right now, I did nothing. Says Rashi, at the moment you planted it, you were already in a violation of Laisita L'cha Asherah. Very severe or extreme type of prohibition that we don't find anywhere else. Here the Torah is saying that you're in violation even for just planting it before one even actually does the Aveira. Yet, the Torah tells us that if a person would appoint good judges, Rashi tells us, "Kedai minu hadayonim achsherim lachayos uloshivam baaretz." It's worth it to have a good set of lawmakers. If you have a proper judicial system, appointed proper judicial system, minoy hadayonim, you just appoint them. That's enough to give you the rights to live in Eretz Yisrael. Says the Shev Shmaitz in his Akdoma to the Sefer, it doesn't say anything that you actually follow those laws, but you appoint proper lawmakers. That's all we can ask of you. People are going to do things incorrectly. We can't hold you accountable. But as a society, you have to appoint, have on the books, laws and regulations. That alone, the Torah says, I'm happy with that. Whether or not later on in time people will come and corrupt things, we can't control that. However, a person needs to have the ability to have a society that has proper laws and regulations. Says the Aruch Lener, why is it that Rashi tells us that if a person appoints corrupt judicial system, it's as if he planted an asherah? What is the connection between the two things? Says the Aruch Lener, it's a beautiful connection, because both of those things start right now. We just said earlier that when you establish a good judicial system, you get credit right then. When you plant an asherah, you get in trouble right then. They share a similarity, that both of these activities are deemed from the get-go, not deemed by the future, but deemed from the beginning when initially you start all things out. When you start off with a bad plan, the Torah holds it against you. When you start off with the right plan, the Torah rewards you. That's why the Torah gives you that comparison. Another pshat is that when I plant an asherah tree, no one really knows my deep intentions. I'm planting a tree. It looks like any other tree in the world. No one knows that I'm doing it with the intention to worship Avodah Zarah. When you set up a corrupt judge, no one knows on the outside that he's corrupt. He smiles and he shakes hands. You can't tell. So that's why the Torah compares the two things. These are both people where from the onset you can't tell. From the outside you don't know if they're corrupt or innocent. You only find out later. Once you get to know them, you see how corrupt they really are and how they ruin society. The Sefarner points out that there's three things in this week's parasha that are very confusing to the simple eye. The Torah tells us, first of all, that you're not allowed to have an asherah. I'm not allowed to plant a tree in my backyard that I plan on worshiping in 5 years from now. The next pasuk says, "V'loisev kum lecha matzeva." I'm not allowed to put up a matzeva. You go to any Jewish cemetery, they're all full of matzevas. One big piece, that's a matzeva. Says the Torah, you're not allowed to have a matzeva. Why? Asher soneh Hashem lekech. It's despised by Hashem. Says the Sefarner, what's the third thing that doesn't make sense? The next pasuk. Lo yisizbach Hashem lekech ashar v'seh asher yibaymum. I am not allowed to offer a carbon that could be worth thousands of dollars because it has an external mum or an internal mum. A physical blemish. In the society where we live today, we'd say physical blemishes. How could the Torah be so superficial? Hashem, the God, doesn't let me bring a carbon that's so beautiful and so precious because it's not looking physically beautiful. Says this one, that's exactly all these three things have in common. They're all three things that to the naked eye seem to be so illogical. That's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu works with a different system than we have. To HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a matzeva is something he does not like. To HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a mum is a big deal. And to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, planting a tree, even though you're using it to jazz up, to make nicer your Beis HaKnesses, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's a lav in the Torah. So these are three things that although to the onlooker seem to be so innocent, and maybe even beautiful, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a very different experience. To HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it is not something that Hashem likes at all. What exactly is so wrong about a matzeva? Rashi points out that the others used to all use a matzeva. Why does matzeva become so bad? So Rashi says, because the goyim started using a matzeva. So the Mefarshim ask, yeah? The goyim also uses a karbonis. They also use a mizbeach. And they also offer karbonis. So we're going to stop doing that also. So the most standard pshat that many Mefarshim learn with, that the idea of a matzeva is, you're not moving. Complacency. Matzeva means this is where I am. I'm done. I maxed out. Matzeva means I put up this, because this is all that I am doing. I am done. I'm not going up anymore. In Jewish life, there's no such thing as complacency. We are never complacent. We are always going up, or we're going down. We never stay at one point. And this is, again, very important for this time of year of Elul. In Elul, we're always thinking about growing. Today has to be better than yesterday was, and tomorrow's going to be better than today. We always have to be going up. Matzeva means I'm done. Says Moshe Feinstein, you know why you put up a matzeva when someone dies? Because then the game's over. When a person is dead, it's over. Then we reflect back on everything they did. But when a person is alive, you can't say matzeva now. That means everything, I'm done. Matzeva is the conclusion. A person's not done. You got another year, another 2 years, 25 years of your life. We never end. Person can say, well, that's it, I'm retiring. I maxed out how much I'm going to be in the Jewish world. I'm only going to know so many mesechtas. I'm only going to know so many halachos in Shulchan Aruch. Hashem, take what I have. That's not Jewish ideology. Jewish ideology, we continuously grow, and we're always growing. We're always looking to improve. We never max out. Right, the greatest gedolim never said to themselves, okay, listen, Rabbi Eliashiv could have said, I know most of the Shas and Shuvas farm out there. I know all the great contemporary Achreinim and the early Rishayim. Nah, go vacation. They continued learning more in the later part of their life than ever, because we don't stop just because we reach a certain age. We never finish. There's always more to learn, and then you review and you learn it more and you learn it deeper and you learn it from a new angle. Complacency does not work in Judaism. That's the idea of the Matseva. The Matseva represents complacency. I'm done. Here, this is what I have to offer. That is not allowed for the Jewish people. And therefore, that's why the Hashem uses very strong words. Hashem hates it. That's a strong word. Hashem doesn't say he hates a lot of things. He calls things toyeva, abominations. And here he says, I hate it. According to this, it's beautiful. Hashem hates that ideology. That it is not a Torah ideology of complacency. Yeah, this is who I am. You know, take it or leave it. I maxed out at my potential. Those words don't exist. We are always continuously growing until a person hits death. And then we put up a matseva, says Rav Moshe Feinstein. Because the matseva represents that you're done. And now you only look back on what you did. That's all you could do. As opposed to us, the living, we have the ability to continue to grow, and we must continue to grow. We can never settle for the level that we reached. The Torah goes on in Perek Yates. The Torah discusses that you're going to have questions, and the Torah says you have to go to the Shofet Asheyeh Bayom HaMehem. You have to go to the judge that's around in your days. Rashi tells us, don't say to yourself, how can I go to these judges? I lived in a generation with great rabbis. I saw great gedolim, and you expect me now to go to these guys? Come on, I remember when these guys were in diapers. I got to go to these guys and hear what they have to say? Says Rashi, yes. You have to go to the Shofet Asheyeh Bayom HaMehem. You have to go with what you have. Says Rav Pam, this is a very, very strong tactic of the Yetzirah. The Yetzirah tells people, don't listen to the rabbis today. Because you saw great rabbis. You saw great gedolim. These guys are a bunch of nobodies. Don't listen to them. Says Rav Pam, that's the Yetzirah talk. There's always going to be a new batch and an old batch. That's just the way the world works. And the Mefarshim say, that old batch had a certain siyata d'shmaya that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them. This new batch has the same siyata d'shmaya. Now it's very difficult for you to say, well, I saw greatness and these are minor leaguers and I saw major leagues, I saw Hall of Famers. You're right. I'm not saying it's easy. But that's the Yetzer Hara talking, says Rav Pam. The Yetzer Hara is trying to convince you that you don't have to listen to the leaders of today because you saw great leaders. Okay? You should be proud of what you saw and you did see them. But you have to work with what we have today. Asheyeh Bayom Mehem. We can only use with what we have today. When Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, the great Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, when he first started teaching in the Tziv, no one wanted to listen to his shir. They all thought he got his job because of nepotism. They all thought he only got his job because he married Rosh Yeshiva's granddaughter. So that's why he got a job. No one wanted to listen to Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. So he finally was forced to have to give a formal prabha to the board. And he was giving this big shir during the board, to the board members. In the middle of the shir, he said, I'm taking back everything I said. Because I remember there's a Pirush HaMishnayis LaHarambam, which was not popular in those years. No one learned Pirush HaMishnayis LaRambam. It wasn't one of those forums that like Reb Chaim should have known. But Reb Chaim said, I have a Pirush HaMishnayis LaRambam, which contradicts my whole Torah. He sat down and closed the sefer. This is on his interview. So then the board said, oh, Yitaka are somebody, we're going to take you to the yeshiva. So the great Reb Chaim Soloveitchik himself had to fight those that said, ah, come on, who is he? He's not really deserving to say a shir in Volozhin. He's only here because of nepotism. So it's not something new that we have, but it's something that we have to keep in mind, that it's a continuous problem. Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Meradishev said, why is it that the Gemara tells us, we have this word, when the Gemara is not sure, the Gemara says, teku. So most people translate, teku means, tish bi yuturitz kushes vibois. Eliyahu Anavi will come and answer all our uncertainties. Now the truth is, that's probably not what that word means. The Aruch has two pshatim. One of the pshatim, the word teiku just means let it stand. We don't have an answer. Because there's really no statement in the Gemara that says Eliyahu Hanavi's job is to paskin shailos. Eliyahu Hanavi's job is to tell us when Mashiach comes. He's not here to tell us shailos. But we'll go with the version that everyone says. The Biskrov used to say that the reason why we tell that to kids is because we want kids to be mitzapel Yeshua. You want a kid to anticipate Mashiach's arrival. So the kid's in class. There's a discussion in the class. You know, is it mutter, is it us? And the Gemara said, you have to wait for Mashiach. So the kid's like, what do you mean? How can I go to sleep tonight? So we tell the kid, well, you know, when Mashiach comes, you'll get an answer. So that night, the kid goes home and he davens and he says, I want Mashiach to come. Halavai, that's the case today. But that's the way the Biskurov said over why we tell that to kids. So it said, Rablevi Yitzchak Mardishev said, you know why Eliyahu was the guy to do that? Because Eliyahu Novi Loi Meis, he never dies. He lives through all the generations. When you live through all the generations, then you have the right to Paskin Shailas for Klal Yisrael. You know all the people. You live through all the different generations. You live through all the people. You live the older generation, the younger generation. You live through it all. Then, says Rablevi Yitzchak, then you have the right to Paskin Shailas. Rabhenkin's grandson said about his grandfather, Rabhenkin, the great Paisik in the Lower East Side, said the reason why his grandfather was so successful was although he was old, but he still knew the younger generation. He was able to relate to that generation. That's really what we talked about earlier. Part of being a good Shaifet is being able to relate to your crowd. If you're going to make decisions and you have no idea to the people what they need to hear, how they work, you're not going to be very successful in what you do. So he said that one of the great things about his grandfather was the reason why his grandfather was so successful at what he did was he was able to relate to the people, and because he was able to relate to the people, he was so successful in being a very, very big Paisik in Klal Yisrael. And that's true for all the Gedolim. They have an ability to understand this generation. When you become above the people, you don't become very successful in being able to help the people, guide the people, because you don't understand their nisyonos, you don't understand what they're battling. That was the problem. We're getting close to the Sefer Bereishis. That was the problem with Noach. Noach didn't get the people. He didn't understand the nisyonos of the generation. He thought everyone should just be like him, lock themselves in a room and learn for 20 hours. Avraham Avinu was a people person. He came out and said, listen guys, I know what you're going through. I lived your life. I know what Avodah Zarah is like. I know the taiva that you have. Come, sit, we'll talk. We'll talk about God, we'll talk about religion. Noach was like, I don't get you guys. Why are you wasting your time? There's work to do. We got to learn Torah. So if you don't know the people, you're not going to be a very successful imani. That's an important lesson for both a Paisik and a Shaifet to be able to connect to the people. In this week's parasha, the Gemara makes a drasha. When the Torah discusses about Jewish witnesses, the Gemara says the word man. And there's an exclusion that women are not allowed to be Jewish witnesses. Women do not have the right in the Torah law to be accepted as two witnesses. So Salvechik has a very famous piece where he says there are those people who make a mistake that this is a terrorist saying that women are second-class citizens. They can't be witnesses in a court of law. Therefore, they are second-class citizens and they should be viewed that way. He says that is absolutely a mistake. The Torah decides various things. He said, and I'd add, he doesn't say this, but I'd add, Moshe and Aaron walk into a Bezdin and say, I saw Reuven kill Shimon, they are thrown out of court. Because they're brothers. Kroivim are absolved. Is there anyone in their right mind that thinks Moshe and Aaron are lying? Moshe and Aaron, the two greatest members of the Jewish society, are lying? No. But the answer is there's rules in the books, and these are one of the rules. And women, likewise, are one of the rules that they are exempt. Says of Salvation, should I tell you why women are exempt? It's not because they're second-class citizens. It's actually because they're more first-class citizen. The Gemara tells us, you know why a melech is not allowed to be a witness? Because it's a busha. You take a king, you make him sit in a courthouse, he's got to get up, and he has to give testimony, and has to be examined, cross-examined. It's embarrassing. Said of Salvation, that's the same thing for the women. They don't. This is. They're better than this. They're called kavuda bas melech panima. This is degrading to them to bring them to a court and make them stand up and cross-examine them and make them crazy. Did you see this way? Did you see that way? It's actually the reason why they're exempt is because of their greatness, right, from salvation. Not the opposite. It's a mistake that society makes that they think it's because they're second-class citizens. Right from salvation is exactly the opposite. It's because they're such valued members of society. Then the Torah tells us about the role of a melech. The value, the role of a melech. Okay, before we move on to a melech, I guess we'll say one other var. There's a var from the Arizal, a very important var from the Arizal. The Arizal says that you can have a tainan on a Kaddish Baruch. It says in the Torah, there's a prohibition called Oisev Yez Benoit. We are not allowed to shecht an animal and its child on the same day. Yet a Kaddish Baruch who slaughtered parents and children on the same day. In the Holocaust, and pogroms, during Bais Rishon, and Bais Sheni, families were wiped out in one day. What happened to Oisev Es Benoi? What happened to the din that you have to cover Jewish blood? When we slaughter an animal, you have to cover the blood. Yet Jewish blood sits, no one covers it. What happened to all that? So the Arizal writes that the answer to all that is a pasuk in this week's parsha. In Perek Yud Zayin, pasuk Beis, it says, the pasuk says that when the Torah describes there will be an argument between two Jews, and they'll have an argument, and they'll go to the Beis Din. Says the Arizal, Ki poli mimcha dovor lamishpat, bein dom ledom, between blood and blood, you're asking me about why there's no covering of the blood, bein din ledin, you're asking me, why is it that you're allowed to have two people dying on the same day? It's because divrei rivois b'sharecha, it's because there were fights in Judaism. there was a break in the Achdus. When there's a break in the Achdus, I don't have to keep those rules. If Klal Yisrael is behaving b'shalom b'shalva, everyone's getting along, you're right. I made a deal. But because you guys aren't getting along, and therefore there's a break in the shalom, because there's divrei rivois b'sharecha, there's words of quarry and argument, that's why I can do what I did, because you're not getting along. A very important lesson from the Arizal about the chashivas, the importance of getting together. Quotes, famous chazal, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could overlook everything. He could even overlook avodah zarah. But he can't overlook when Klal Yisrael doesn't get together. That is something that's too important to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He cannot overlook and say, I'll let it slide. He can let avodah zarah slide, which is the biggest slap in the face to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, saying that there's another God. Hashem can even forgive that. But he can't forgive, can't overlook when there's no shalom. Says the Arizal, this pasuk is the answer to how many of the tragedies befell the Klal Yisrael, is because the revoice b'sharecha, we allowed fights, revoice from the word rift to fight, b'sharecha, in our gateways, we allowed the disagreements to work its way into Jewish society. The pasuk tells us that when you have a question, so you go to the Bezdin, and you have to listen to whatever they tell you. Loisasur, you're not allowed to, minadavar she'agid l'cho yaminu small. You go to the Bezdin, they tell you your left hand is your right hand, you accept it, and you move on. Whatever they tell you, you have to listen. That's what the pasuk tells us. This is a very famous concept, but we have this idea called loisasur. Why do I have to listen to the Rabbanan? Or the Gemara asks him, Masechet Shabbos, how can I make a brach on a mitzvah derabanan? When we make brachas, we say the words, Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvah yisav, v'tzivon, when he commanded me. Asks the Gemara, Hashem never commanded me to light Ner Shabbos. That was Chazal. Hashem never commanded me to light Ner Chanukah. That was the rabbis. How can I say the words Hashem commanded me? So the Gemara answers, because you have to listen to whatever the rabbi said, from a pasuk in this week's Pasha. Lo yisasur. You're not allowed to turn away from anything they tell you. If you walk into a Sanhedrin, they tell you, you know it's daytime. You see, Rabbi, it's pitch dark. I'm telling you, it's daytime. You have to listen. You have to believe whatever they tell you. You have to believe your left hand is your right hand is your left hand. So Rav Motel Katz, the Rashivan, said, how are you supposed to do this? How can anyone live a life like that? Well, you go to the rabbi, and you know the rabbi missed the boat. You know he's wrong. But he tell, and you got to believe it. Says Rav Motel Katz, the answer is, the more you work on Yiras Hashem, that's how you do it. A person that's continually growing is Avodas Hashem. He's continually working on being a Yerei Hashem. I fear God, and I fear God and His leaders, and I believe that they have a certain Siyata Deshmaya and HaKadosh Baruch Hu who's guiding them and leading them. Then you believe it. If you're not working on yourself, you'll never be able to do this. If you're working from a merely logical lifestyle, this will never work. But if you're working with a Yerei Hashem lifestyle, that these people are agents of Hashem, and Hashem is giving them the power and the wisdom and the insight to do what they're doing, therefore he writes, it's a little easier, I'm not saying it's that easy, it's slightly easier to be able to handle such news when it doesn't make any logical sense to oneself. The Torah tells us about a melech, a very interesting role. The Jewish king is a very interesting type of thing. In society, the king had all the power. No one could tell him anything, he wasn't controlled, like a dictator. Right? No one tells him what to do. He does what he wants, how he wants. He kills who he wants, his family members, closest members of his cabinet. He kills, he does whatever he wants. When it comes to a Jewish king, the Torah says not so fast. The Torah has rules, regulations, restrictions on a Jewish king. Although it's a mitzvah to have a Jewish king, it's an important thing. We need to have it. This is a continuing our theme of having leaders in society. We have to have those who make the laws, we have to have a king, we also have to have a police force. These are all integral to a society, but there's rules and regulations that the Torah says that a king has to have. One of the rules is, he's not allowed to have too many wives, he's also not allowed to have too many horses, he's not allowed to have too much money. There's a limitation how much money he's allowed to have. Now, any good king would know that that's part of being a king, is having all this money. Yet the Torah says when it comes to a Jewish king, he's not allowed to have too much money. Why not? What's wrong with too much money? So the other ones the Torah says, too many women, too many horses, that's going to be a bad combination. Too many horses, you're going to end up back in Mitzrayim. Too many women, okay, not a good idea. But where's the money? What's wrong with having too much money? So Moshe Sternberg says also something very, very powerful. He says, if you have tons and tons of money, you start to think to yourself, I don't need Hashem in this equation anymore. I'm self-sufficient. If you're a king that has all the money in the world, so when you go to sleep at night, you say to yourself, no one can touch me. I got it. I'm good. God, you can go on vacation. I don't need you now. I'm good. I'll pick up from here. You can worry about the rest of the world. There's no longer a need. When a person is not wealthy, who does not have an uncontrollable amount of money, he needs to come out to Kadosh Baruch Hu and say, how am I going to get up tomorrow? How am I going to pay my workers? How am I going to allow the country to continue to survive? I need money. So you daven and you reach out to Kadosh Baruch Hu. But when you're independently wealthy, says the Meshach Tabrach, there's no motivation to connect to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, you will eventually sway off the path of Kadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, it's very important that a king does not gather too much money. But there's another interesting limitation on the king. The king must have two Sifrei Torah, one that he carries with him everywhere he goes, and one that he has in his house. So why the need for two Sifrei Torah? So Rabbi Franz says a very nice idea. He said the second Sifrei Torah is, when the king walks around, he's supposed to act like a king. The Gemara says, Melech Shemachal Kvoide in Kvoide Machal. He can't just say, oh, I'm a king, don't worry. No, you have to act the part. So when a guy spends his whole day acting like he's greater than everyone else, what do you think eventually happens? He starts to think he's better than everyone else. So he comes home. And when he comes to his house, besides for his wife putting him in his place, which is important, the Torah puts him in his place. He has to save a Torah in his house that he reads from. And he reads the Torah where the Torah says, you're not that great. Yeah, on the outside, you walk around like that and people have to honor you and respect you. But when you come home to your house and you open up the Sefer Torah and you read the Sefer Torah like everyone else does, you realize you're no different than anyone else out there. It humbles him. Because a king is in a very difficult place. On one hand, he has to act like I'm greater than you, but he can't, because he's not a Kadosh Baruch Hu, he's a Melech Bas of Adam. And therefore, the idea of the second Sefer is really to humble him, to bring him back to reality. But listen, buddy, you put your pants on the same way everyone else does, one leg at a time. Maybe you're a king, but you're a human being. And that is a very humbling experience, which every king needs. But there's a very important pasuk in the Torah. The Torah tells us that the role of the Sifrei Torah is why? For Hoyse Ima V'Karba Koy Mechayev. Why? L'man Yilmad L'Yireh Es Hashem Eleikov. To bring a person to Yireh Shemayim. The entire purpose of why we learn Torah says is summed up right here. Why? L'Yireh Es Hashem Eleikov. We learn Torah to bring us, to make us God-fearing Jews. That's why we learn. This is why there was such a debate in the early European yeshivas, to should there be an official Musar Seder. Many of the great yeshivas said, what do we need Musar for? This is a Musar Sefer. The Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch, these are our Musar Svarim. When a person learns Torah, he becomes a better person. The problem is, as time went on, that wasn't the case. People learned Torah for academic reasons, intellectual reasons, to be smarter than the guy next to him, whatever the case may be. But the Torah is reminding us that the sole purpose of Torah is why? The man yilmad liyira es Hashem aleikav. Says Rav Motel Katz, that when the Torah goes on to say about a king, l'man yarech yomim al mamlachtoi, it means that in order, it says, v'karibo kol yimei chayof. Says Rav Motel Katz, a person has to work on his yira es Hashem every day of his life. It's not only an Elul experience, as such, yimei tshuva, v'karibo kol yimei chayof. Every day we have to work on a yira es Hashem. That's our obligation as Jews, is to continue to work on our Avodas Hashem to be able to become better people. Okay, we're running short on time. There's a very beautiful var from the Satmar Rebbe, which I have to get to. The Satmar Rebbe writes, in this week's parasha, the Torah discusses, again, I'm skipping around due to time, the Torah discusses the idea of you'll have in Klal Yisrael these types of people that want to know what's going on in the world. These kids, people who sway off, ki yimotze, you'll find, that's Lashon HaTorah, you'll find these people that want to know the future. And they'll use all these funny ways of kishuf and these other things, and the Torah says, don't do that. Tamim tia im Hashem alekech. But the Torah starts off, lo yimotze b'cha, it shouldn't be found by you, mavir b'no b'tabesh, someone who passes their son into a fire, which is a form of worship, kaysim ksamim ma'inu menachish, all forms of witchcraft and of idazar. Asks the Satmar Rebbe, the Divrei Yoel, what's the lashon of lo yimotze b'cha, it shouldn't be found by you. It should have just said, it shouldn't happen. Says the Satmar Rebbe, a beautiful idea in chinuch. He says, no one raises their children to become one of these people. And no one raises their children to be past the fire. But you know what happens to the Satmar Rebbe? If we don't educate our children, and we're not involved in their upbringing, and we don't set boundaries for them, you know what's going to happen one day? It's going to pop up, and we're going to say, lo and behold, my kid just jumped into fire because he wants to worship an Avodah Zarah. It's going to be a mitzvah. It's going to pop up like something you found. Where did this come from? Says Samar, I'll tell you where it came from. It's because you didn't spend time looking at who your kid hangs out with, what your kid sees, what schools your kid go to, what their values are. You're not involved. Of course, no one wants their kid to be a no one's maver b'noyu b'd. No one actually puts their kid into fire. But you allow it to happen because you're not involved. You just sit back. Says the Samar, but that's the lashon of lo yimotze. It shouldn't be found. It's going to be like, what? Where did this come from? I'll tell you where it came from, says the Samar. It's because you weren't involved. you didn't take a stand. You didn't care enough to educate, to be involved. He talks about their friends and who they hang out with. Very, very important lessons, says the Sa'amar Rebbe, when it comes to the idea of chinuch. A person has to make sure that they're involved and they see what's going on. They know who they're hanging out with, so it shouldn't pop up one day, well, lo and behold, my child is swaying off. Yeah, if you're 10 years not involved, that can happen. Therefore, the Torah writes the Lashon of Yimatzei, it's like something you find because you weren't aware of it, because you didn't spend the time to properly invest to ensure that they have a productive future.